All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, August 29, 2015. A little cool out there this morning, but just beautiful to tee it up, and hope you get a chance to do so. Looking forward to talking to Brian Gaffney, the head professional at the Quaker Ridge Golf Club, a AW Tillinghast treasure, if you will, also known as Tilly's treasure, believe it or not. Brian was the first club pro since 2011 to make the cut at the PGA Championship, which I think is becoming harder and harder for club professionals to do. Fields are getting deeper and deeper, but Brian was fantastic and, again, first club pro to make it since 2011, so all credit to him. But we're going to take a short break, and when we're back, we'll be talking with Brian Gaffney, the head professional at Quaker Ridge Golf Club. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabia has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by the head professional at Tilly's Treasure Professional Quaker Ridge Golf Club, Brian Gaffney. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's really an honor to talk with one of the only men to survive the club pro to survive the since 2011 at the PGA Championship. I was watching Jason Day this last couple of days, and I was thinking, you know, he's probably just coming down from his whirlwind of accolades and celebrations, if you will. But for you, and I was thinking of you coming on, I can't imagine you had much time to cherish the moments that you had at the 2015 PGA, you know, knowing that you had to get right back to work. How was that when you got back?
It was great coming back. The members were very receptive and kind with their words and their actions when I got back. So that part was great. Mm-hmm. And whatever I may not have been able to enjoy at the moment because I had to be back at work, I'll be able to enjoy for years to come, for sure.
When you got back, I'm sure the members had a message for you. And what was that like when you talked to them? And how has that been?
It's been great, and it's interesting because each member has their own take on how the week went.
Right.
Some were, all were very positive. Some would ask questions of certain shots, or, you know, good or bad, and others wanted to know what was it like standing on the 18th green with Jason Day or any other situations that happened along the way. But it's been such a great experience for me, such a positive bump for Quaker Ridge and getting the club back out there in front of the golfing world, and I think it's stayed positive the last couple days following the event.
You mentioned something that each member has personalized your experience, if you will, which is kind of an interesting thing. It does bring you, on some level, it does bring you closer to the members, doesn't it?
Oh, most definitely. And what's really interesting is I've heard from people that I may have only met once. I'm in my second year here at Quaker Ridge.
Right.
Some people who don't play that much golf took the time to sit down and put a pen to paper and write a note just saying congratulations, and it's I'm so flattered by people that make that effort, and it feels really great. I just hope that from my side, I've represented the club well, and all the people who have been supportive of me along the way, I hope that they get to enjoy in this as well.
Well, I think they have, and speaking from someone who's watched you, you know, obviously from afar, but, you know, just in the way you've handled the media and all the different media types, and I think you've been a fine representation of the not only Quaker Ridge, but the Metropolitan Golf Association in general, so at large, so as well as the PGA of America. So let me just pass that along.
Thank you.
Absolutely. When you know, let's just jump back for maybe who sort of inspired you to play golf, and you know, when did you know that this was something that you were going to do for a living?
Well, that's a great question. I was really fortunate. As a kid, my parents were members at a country club.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't the typical country club kid. I didn't play golf and hang out at the pool and spend my entire day there. I really missed that. I worked on the maintenance crew, and I caddied there. And it was a very different, you know, I would play golf with my dad at night when he would play nine holes. When I was in my senior year of high school, I started to get better at golf. I played in a couple junior tournaments. My senior year of high school, I said to my parents, I'm thinking about going to this school and this school. And they said, oh, okay. I'm the youngest of six kids in 7 years. And they said, we're out of money and we're going to move. So that was a shocker.
Right.
And really fortunately for me, they didn't move for a couple years. We had an old Victorian house that fortunately no one wanted. So I got to stay in New Jersey at that club for two more years. And I really got to enjoy the benefits that I had as a child and look around at this golf course and say, you know, I may not have this. I better take advantage of the opportunities I've been given.
Right.
And so at that time, I started to play more golf and practice and use the facility, still working on the maintenance crew. And so I won the club championship. And that was a really, really big step for me because it went from being like an okay kid who played golf to, you know, at the time, there were good golfers there.
Sure.
So then I played in college, and after college, my parents had moved, and it was time to decide what I was going to do in life. And I loved the game, and my dad said, you know, take a shot at the golf, and if it doesn't work, you can always do something else. And, well, I haven't done anything else yet. So
so it's
worked
out
pretty well. Yeah, it's worked out really well for me.
What kind of perspective did you get, and how has it stayed with you, this idea of playing, of working at the maintenance shed?
I don't know. It was a great experience. I learned a lot. And what it helped me most with was I was at the golf course at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was done at sort of 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning doing my work for the maintenance crew.
Sure.
And then I was there, so I was fortunate that I could take a shower and then go and practice. And
right.
For a couple summers, I did that and took advantage of the opportunity that was given and practiced like crazy. And you know, I missed the whole boat of lessons and junior golf and
right.
And playing in tournaments. I played in a few tournaments as a kid, but not many. Yeah, I don't know. In a way, I think that was a good thing because it kept me away from it. And then when I got it, I really liked it, and I wanted more of it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that sort of delayed gratification, if you will, because nowadays kids are being stretched so thin in terms of activities. It's very difficult to get them or, you know, to sort of keep it in perspective in terms of trying to find something that you're really passionate about.
I think finding something you're passionate about and then don't make that the only thing you do.
Right.
Enjoy, you know, I think it's good that kids play other sports as well. You know, if they love golf, that's great, and that's their number one sport, that's fine. But still, they should play soccer and other things, not just golf, unless they're, you know, an exceptional golfer.
Right.
Even then, it's still good to have other perspective.
I think people have known that for quite some time, but now it's really starting to come to the forefront with this, you know, Jordan Spieth and that idea that his, you know, that article that came out that his father said that, you know, he's an athlete first. And I think we're starting to now see a little sort of publicized argument against this whole idea of specialization in sport.
Yeah. And I feel that same way, yeah.
And there's a lot of truth there. I think people don't understand how beneficial that other sports have even in the golf game in terms of flexibility or whatnot.
Sure. And then I think ultimately it also comes down to the child. If the student of the game has the passion that's what they want to do and they spend all of their time, that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
But now if it's put on them. And then from my perspective, I've got some kids that just love the game, and I feel like it's my job to teach them how to understand to play the game on their own, meaning it's fine that you come back and you're hitting the ball off to the left.
Right.
I can fix that for you, but I want you to know why that happens, how to read it, and how to fix it on your own. So it's more that I try and give these kids education over years that turns into doctrine that they can then play golf and say, all right, ball's turning left to right, I need to do this and this to make it go right to left, and that will straighten it out more. And the kids I work with that I've spent time with, as the time goes on, when they take a lesson, it's more asking them questions to see if they can answer them. And then when they can answer them, then I think that's when the magic happens.
Do you think that that's something, for whatever reasons in the past, this idea of self-discovery has been lost a little bit?
Oof, maybe that's for other people to decide.
Right.
But I like the idea of, you know, digging holes out of the ground, trying to figure it out
right.
on your own with a little bit of help to know what to do.
Right.
Instead of just, you know, kind of hovering over them to make sure they're doing exactly what they need to do. I think about it a little differently than maybe others.
Right, right. Well, that you know, it's just an interesting conversation, and one we'll have to continue in a few minutes, but I have to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, regripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by head professional at Quaker Ridge Golf Club, Brian Gaffney. Brian, we're talking about teaching a little bit there, and I asked you about sort of your inspirations early on as a child, but how about teaching inspirations?
I've had the opportunity the last 5 years or so to go and meet with some of the top 100 teachers in the country. And what I've done over 25 years or so of being in the game is come up with my own sort of ideas on how the club works and taking lessons from certain instructors and trying to keep it basic and simple. And then I've taken my information and I've gone to these top 100 instructors and said, here's what I think of the golf swing. What do you think of what I say, and does it make sense? And I try and keep it very basic, very simple, but it's been interesting to go to them and kind of get the nod that from the top 100 instructors that I've met with,
mm-hmm.
what you're saying is correct and it makes good common sense. So I think that's important, and that's what I've tried to do.
Is there a sort of philosophy behind what it is that, or the basis of what you like to teach or how you go about teaching?
Yeah, so it's pure basics, you know, your posture, your grip, your alignment, if those are relatively neutral, then it should pretty much work. And then more important things are how the club comes back to the ball, meaning the path and the angle of the face.
Right.
And those two things need to make sense. If the path is going out to in, chances are the ball is going to spin to the right.
Right.
So if the ball is going to spin to the right, the face should be pointed a little bit left of the target so that it can start left and then spin to the right. And just the opposite with a draw.
Right.
Those numbers work unless the face is too closed or the path is too far out to in for it not to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've heard this recently from one of those instructors that I thought was pretty interesting. Students and players and tour players are either cats or dogs. And what he meant by that was, you know, a cat will always land on its feet. If you, you know, throw a cat up in the air, it twists in the air and comes down on its feet.
Sure.
Dog may not so much do that. So when I have students that might be hitting the ball off to the right, I'll ask them questions about other sports they've played or how the body moves to make the ball spin the other direction. And I'll ask them, it was someone I had the other day, has a really complicated golf swing, but apparently this guy is a really good tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, when you hit a forehand and a topspin forehand, can you make the ball spin to the left a little bit? And he said, sure, it's a passing shot kind of around the post. And I said, how do you do that? So he showed me, and I said, now can you do that with a six iron? And he could. Now this club goes in all kinds of crazy different places, but when he gets back down to the ball, he can make it work. And so those are things that I try and do is get them to figure out how to get the club to move the direction it needs to move to make it go relatively straight. And it was kind of nice that he figured it out with just a few questions.
Sure.
And I said to him, he's going to be just fine in golf. We just need to equate things to tennis.
Well, and I think to your credit, I think it shows, you know, how important communication is in finding a way for people to identify what it is that you're trying to get them to do. And that's not always an easy thing to do. And in this particular case, you found an opening and you used that to help him internalize what it is that you were trying to get him to do.
Well, you're spot on there. And there's a handful of questions that I ask when we start. And if it's someone that I haven't worked with before, but I ask them their goals. What do you want to have happen? And then I'll say something funny like, okay, you come home at the end of the day, this is with this guy, and your wife asks you how the lesson went, and you say, it went great because, I'll fill in the blank.
Right.
And then they tell me exactly what they want. After that, then I ask them, how do you like to learn? Do you like to see it by video? Do you like to hear it by talking about what the club needs to do, or your body needs to do? Or do you like to physically be moved in positions to show them where they need to go? And so you can see it, you can hear it, or you can feel it. And then when they identify what that is, and not everybody is just one way.
Sure.
But once they identify that, then I'll try and speak that language, and then hopefully I can get through to them. But if they like to see it, and all I do is move their body, they may not understand it as well.
Right.
I think that's important that we as instructors speak the language that they understand.
Yeah, even if it is for them, sometimes what they think they see and what they think they feel are really different from what they actually are doing. Isn't it the case?
You're spot on.
I mean, and so it's hard to sort of, you know, and it's a lot of times I remember when I was just starting out a very short backswing and, you know, my instructor would say overswing, and that would almost probably just get me to parallel. Forget about overswinging. You know, I'm thinking that my backswing is like John Daly when, and maybe just be getting to parallel. And so my idea of my backswing was totally my feel, I guess you could say, not to be like Tiger Woods and start talking about feels, but my feel was way different than what I actually was doing.
I think that's often the case. Yeah. For all of us.
Yeah, I agree. And it makes for an interesting journey, if you will, to the middle of getting them to do and getting us as amateurs to do what you're trying to tell us of it, to them trying to match up what it is that we think we're doing and what we're actually doing. That's kind of quite the challenge for you, I guess.
For all of us. I think for students as well,
yeah,
to be able to understand what we're saying. And then sometimes I'll ask them, what did I say that connected with you? because I'm taking notes right now, and I want to be able to tell you another time what you said you felt.
Right.
If there's someone that works that way, or what did you see that you need to change? And then with those notes, I'll go back to them each time with a lesson, and I'll say, back when we met on July 7th, you said that with your driver, it felt better with the ball back in your stance.
Yeah.
And you've got it back outside in front of your left toe again.
Sure.
I'll say, oh, yeah, that's right. Forgot about that.
I want to fast forward. I kind of got lost. I like I enjoy the dialogue about the instruction and all that kind of stuff. But the PGA Championship 2015, I'm sure a lot of people have asked you, you know, what it's been like and what's the case been. But this isn't – the 2015 PGA hasn't been your first rodeo. You've been there four times, including another major, the 2012 U.S. Open. I was just kind of curious, when you think about your past – these past five major championships, what was the lesson learned when you think back to each one of them?
This year, different from any other year, I wanted to get away from the golf course, get away from the media, not that the media is looking for me, the circus that is the event. Meaning, when you're there, there's nothing more exciting than going to see on the range right next to you, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, Luke Donald, Jordan Spieth. They were right behind me on the range hitting balls at the same time I was.
Right.
So I stopped and then went over to watch them, because when are we ever going to be that close and have that opportunity? So in years past, what I would do is play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday practice rounds. I'd play 18 holes each day, get a feel for the golf course. I'd hit balls, but then I would go down to the bunker to go hit some bunker shots, and there's Ricky Fowler. And here I am hitting bunker shots next to Ricky Fowler. Or Jim Furyk is hitting pitch shots. And you say, wow, the club doesn't move as funny in person as it does on TV. And you hear the way the club impacts the sand, or you hear the turf interaction between a wedge and the fairway with them when you're hitting pitch shots.
Sure.
And that's all very exciting and so much fun to take in. But this year, what I tried to do is get away from the golf course. The weather wasn't great on Monday. I played six holes. Hit a few balls, and that was it. Tuesday was my long day. I ended up playing 18 holes and was done. And then Wednesday I played nine holes at 7 o'clock in the morning on the back nine. No one was there. It was perfect. And played golf. I didn't hit pitch shots from everywhere, or bunker shots, or all the different things. I wanted to just play. So that's different from what I've done in the past. And then I left, literally, like got away, went somewhere, did a little sightseeing with my wife, and that was nice to do that, because kind of like a test in school, you can't cram the last 2 days before the test. You have to get the knowledge and the understanding before before you take the test.
So
For me, I had been playing a lot of golf recently, in local tournaments, and I had been playing really good golf, shooting under par in most tournaments. I would shoot in the 60s, kind of at least one or two rounds in each tournament. So Saturday before I left to go to the PGA at Quaker, I shot 63 and shot the course record. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm ready. And I think the only thing that the lesson learned was take your time, don't wear yourself out, enjoy a little bit of what it is, but don't overexert yourself and not play as well as you can. And I think that worked out this time.
Was it even that a little, was that difficult to do, to be disciplined to do that? Because part of you must feel like, you know, it is great to be around these guys, and there's probably things you could bring back to your membership, either stories or lessons or tips or, you know, that kind of stuff. I can imagine that it was a little, even that was a little difficult to be disciplined to do that.
Yes. On Tuesday, after I played 18, we had to do a photo, the club professionals did a photo shoot.
Yes.
Early in the morning, and so a bunch of us were going out after that. And when we went over to the tee, there's a bunch of people. There's no tee times. You just show up whenever you want and go and play, and whoever is there, you may hook up, you may not. So there were a lot of people there, and I just kind of sat off to the side and waited for all the sort of circus to go by, and then I went to play. But it took literally 6 hours to play. Now I have nowhere to be, so that was fine. After I was done, I went to hit a few balls, and I just wasn't finding the place that where I was with my swing or the feel, so I just kept hitting balls. And my wife came over, and she said, hey, you said you weren't really going to wear yourself out, and you've been on the range for almost 2 hours.
Oh, man.
And you don't feel it because there's so many people there, there's energy, and oh, by the way, you hit whatever golf ball you play on the range. So, you know, I use a TaylorMade Tour Preferred X. They've got that. They've got a TaylorMade Tour Preferred. They've
right.
got every Titleist, Nike,
right.
Bridgestone. Whatever ball you play, they have it. I was glad to get that little reminder from my wife saying, you know, maybe you've been here enough. And then I realized, okay, I should go now. So I hit a few more balls and then left. And that was the way to do it.
Well, we're just about out of time. And, Brian, I really appreciate you coming and taking the time. I know you're busy with your schedule, and I know it's been crazy and just competed in the Met Open, the 100th Met Open at Wingfoot. So I really do appreciate your time, and thank you for being such a fine gentleman, and I really appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be here, and continued success with the show.
Well, thank you very much, and hopefully we'll meet up down the road, and we'll see you in the news some a little more at the next year's majors. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Anthony.
All right, have a great day, Brian.
You too.
All right, that was Brian Gaffney, the head professional at Quaker Ridge. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, that's it, folks. That's all the time we have for On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you very much for joining me, and make sure you get out there and get a chance to tee it up and enjoy the beautiful weather we have. Go see your local PGA professional, get that swing in order, and we'll catch you next week on Par with Anthony Scorsia.